From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Richmond.
Sunset.
Oakland, California.
Concord, California.
Fairfield.
Foothill.
Coming up, voters in the city of Richmond have the chance to shake up the soda industry.
We want our community to not drink as much sugary beverages.
So they may tax themselves out of the habit. From New York to the Bay Area, a movement's underway to legislate healthy behavior, but some people think that's creating a nanny state.
First he banned smoking, then he banned trans fats, then he added bike lanes everywhere. Now he's gone too far.
Today, we're considering the pros and cons of lawmakers legislating our lifestyles.
It is not the role for government to decide what's in the best interest of kids. It's the role of parents to decide.
Stay tuned for a supersized edition of Cross Currents. Today, we're talking about a topic that's pretty relevant to the Bay Area, the so-called nanny state.
In other words, how much should laws govern what we do?
The Bay Area is at the forefront of a potential shift in conventional thinking on the issue, specifically around obesity. Voters in Richmond over in the East Bay are considering a ballot measure that would tax sodas and other sugary drinks sold in the city at a penny an ounce.
And at the same time, on the East Coast, today, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg's straight-up ban on selling soft drinks larger than 16 ounces in restaurants, it just passed. These are the opening salvos in the soda wars.
Here's Mayor Bloomberg speaking this morning in New York City.
Beginning March 12th, sugary beverages will no longer be sold by food establishments in portions greater than 16 ounces. Fruit or vegetable juice with no added sugar or beverages that contain more than 50% milk are not impacted by this rule. The new regulation applies to sugary drinks sold at restaurants, food carts, delis, movie theater concessions, stadiums, and arenas. And the six-month window will give businesses time to adjust their menu boards, container size, and make any other necessary changes to ensure that they are in compliance so that it will not impact their ability to continue with their businesses. They have plenty of time to make the adjustments.
While the Board of Health this morning approved Bloomberg's ban, many New Yorkers are not into it. A New York Times poll conducted last month found 60% of respondents thought this was a bad idea. So did Stephen Colbert from Comedy Central's The Colbert Report. But he does think it's funny.
Nation, I am no fan of New York City billionaire, billion mayor Michael Bloomberg. He is turning New York into an organic, slow food nanny state. First, he banned smoking. Then he banned trans fats. Then he added bike lanes everywhere. Now it's nearly impossible for me to hit bikers on my drive to work. And folks, now he's gone too far. No more giant sodas? Come on! This is America, the land of plenty. We haven't even achieved type 3 diabetes yet. We're so close. And I don't know about you, but I don't know about you folks. But I can't drink less than 16 ounces. I need a soda so large that James Cameron wants to go to the bottom of it. This ban will completely ruin my movie-going experience.
Stephen Colbert and other comedians have found some pretty easy laughs behind what people are calling the Big Gulp ban.
Yeah, like, what do you call a small Coke in New York, Hannah?
I don't know, what?
A large? I just made that up.
Mm-hmm. Well, while New Yorkers roast their mayor's good intentions, economists are considering other ways to break down obesity by smacking it in the bottom line.
Oh, good one.
I try. A new study of 1,700 U.S. supermarkets found that small price differences can nudge consumer behavior one way or another.
Like coupons or Groupons.
Right. Or taxes. Which brings us back to the Bay Area. Now that the New York Board of Health has approved the big soda ban, the nation's eyes turn to the city of Richmond, California, where voters have a chance to really shake up the soda industry. They'll take on Measure N, which would tax sugar-sweetened beverages at a penny an ounce.
So a 64-ounce super big gulp would cost 64 cents more.
Yep. And a companion measure, Measure O, would advise the city to spend that revenue on sports and anti-obesity programs. But these are no slam dunk propositions. And of course, the soda industry is putting up some big bucks to block them from passing.
KALW's Isaac Silk went to Richmond to hear what people there think about this tax measure that has the whole nation abuzz.
If you ride BART to its northwestern terminus, you'll find yourself at McDonald Avenue and 19th Street, just a few blocks east of downtown Richmond. McDonald is a four-lane street lined with restaurants, gas stations, and other retailers. I came here to find out how local business owners feel about the soda tax ballot initiative.
It will affect all the businesses around here, not only mine. I mean, it's in general.
That's Adele Moe. He owns La Raza Market and Grocery.
The purpose of the tax, they say it's for the kids not to drink soda. But we are surrounded by other cities. Everybody's going to go just buy it somewhere else.
Mo and other business people are afraid their profits will fall. While supporters of the tax say they can focus on selling different products, Mo just doesn't think it's the government's responsibility to tell him what to do.
I mean, when you raise like $1.40 per 20-pack or 24-pack, I know it's, I have kids also and I'm worried about them, but this thing could be done from home, not from the stores.
Mo's got a point, but it's not supported by the Institute of Medicine. In a study released in May, the health arm of the National Academy of Sciences found that people's ability to exercise a personal choice has been limited by a lack of options and a preference to eat unhealthy, if tasty, foods. Looking around McDonald Avenue, I can see examples of this everywhere. Fast food joints dot the block. But there are other possibilities. A few blocks down the street, I meet Dionisio Hracia, a manager of La Flor de Jalisco Market. He's against Richmond's new tax proposition. Not because he's concerned over his bottom line or worried about who controls whether or not people drink too much soda.
I don't support it because it doesn't seem like it's going to help much at all. And the money's probably going to get lost in the process of all the paperwork and all that stuff.
Haracha's concerns come back to how the proposition is written. If it passes, the money raised by the tax will be sent to the city's general fund, where it will be used at the discretion of local government. Another ballot measure advises the city to spend the revenue on education and recreation programs, but it's non-binding, so the money could conceivably go anywhere. As I make my way farther east on McDonald, the retail stores thin out, making way for housing complexes, churches, a school, and Nickel Park. It's a large plot of land with baseball diamonds, playscapes, and tennis courts. The advisory initiative directs the city to create more places like this. That could help change youth culture in Richmond. Every year in Contra Costa County, $404 million in healthcare costs are attributed to obesity. And the rate of obesity is rising. By 2030, 42% of adults in Richmond will be obese. At Nickel, I talk with a teenage skater named Dell, who doesn't share his last name. He says he doesn't think the prop proponents have the right take on the obesity issue.
They're doing it wrong because the way to reverse that obesity is to make healthier foods cheaper. Because the fatty foods are more, they're not as expensive to buy, so like nobody's rich in Richmond really, so.
The city of Richmond is tackling that issue as well, recently launching initiatives to distribute more low-cost produce around the city. And it's arguable that raising the price of sugary drinks will point more people toward healthier options. I meet a man named Pablo in the park, a father who doesn't give his last name. He supports taxes and other government programs that could help people get healthier.
Like the cigarette, you know. Before, the people buy cigarette, and then the government say, okay, right now I had too many people with cancer, too many problems. I can pay for that, so I need now... All the company, cigarette company, need pay tax. When you buy any case with cigarettes, you will be pay tax, and that tax will be used for help to the people with cancer or problem for the smoke.
Opinions in Richmond are divided over the ever-contentious issue of raising taxes. But what the people of McDonald Ave do agree on is that obesity in Richmond is a serious issue. In November, the voters will help decide what role their government will have in the solution. In Richmond, I'm Isaac Silk for Cross Currents.
Yeah. You're listening to a special hour-long edition of Cross Currents. We just heard about the landmark measure on the ballot in Richmond that would tax sugary drink sales at a penny an ounce. Now, we'd like to hear where you weigh in on the issue. Is it a good idea, or should the government stay out of it? Share your comments at KALW.org.
Coming up, we'll trace the Bay Area's nanny legislation from taxing sodas back to revamping Happy Meals.
So what you're basically telling us is, guess what? McDonald's food is
yes.
Duh!
That's coming up. But first, we'd like to take a short break to invite you to become a member of KALW. We're on our fall membership drive, so make a pledge right now at 800-525-9917.
Or go to kalw.org. It's our fall membership drive. We depend on you to come to you to complete Cross Currents every day and to bring you the stories, take you to Richmond like we did earlier today. We depend on you for 77% of our operating budget, believe it or not. So we would like to invite you to join the Cross Currents family, join the KALW family and community by donating now at kalw.org or give us a call at 800-525-9917.
That's 800-525-9917. And during Cross Currents today, we have a $500 challenge. And that means that if we can reach $500 in donations to KALW to keep us on the air, we'll get an additional $500. So there's not a better time than right now. And I'm asking you, how about you give $91.70? Represent KALW 91.7 with a $91.70 pledge. That breaks down, Hana, to a quarter a day.
Quarter a day is pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. At 800-525-9917. If you do a quarter a day, I mean, what do you spend a quarter a day on that's worth that? I mean, if you listen to a story like, that was worth a quarter, you know, there it is.
Or maybe a gumball is a quarter.
A gumball is a quarter. There's hardly anything worth that costs a quarter these days, but for $91.70 to KALW right now, you get all of our coverage. And the way that I kind of see it, Hana, is maybe there's a day where you're not so into it. And you're like, you know, that wasn't so great. But then the next day, there's some that was worth a dollar. You know, maybe the next day, that was the best story I've ever heard. I'm going to say that was worth $5. It adds up pretty quickly. But if you just break it down to a quarter a day, it's a $91.70 pledge to KALW to keep us on the air during our drive. It goes to our doubling challenge grant of $500. Please call right now, 800-525-9917. We only have seconds to get back to the show, Hana.
That's right. So run over to KALW.org. Make your pledge now. You said you wanted the pledge breaks short, and we're giving them to you short. But you have to make it work. You have to make that call, 800-525-9917. And now we'll go back to the show.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney.
And I'm Hana Baba. We're back now to explore this idea of legislating healthy behavior a bit further. The soda wars are underway on the West Coast and in the East. And to get us back in the groove, here's New Yorker John Stewart and his thoughts on Mayor Bloomberg's ban.
Wow. Wow. Wow, Mayor Bloomberg. Wow. I love this idea you have of banning sodas larger than 16 ounces. It combines the draconian government overreach people love with the probable lack of results they expect. What are you doing? We already let you make up a third term as mayor. Put cameras on every intersection, and for some reason, picnic tables in the middle of 7th Avenue? What the is that? This is all we have left. This is all we have!
While Mayor Bloomberg is being clowned by comedians for how he's trying to change New York, we'll turn our attention back to the Bay Area, where the history of liberal politics goes right up to right now. Rules here cover topics from food to fun to technology.
In fact, last summer, San Francisco Supervisor John Avalos wrote legislation requiring cell phone retailers to provide information regarding the radiation they emit for consumers to keep them safe. Well, it passed unanimously in the city, but just a few days ago, on Monday, that law was rejected by a federal appeals court.
Still, Supervisor Avalos has strong feelings about so-called nanny politics. I spoke with him last fall, just before he came in second in the mayor's race. As one of the top progressives in San Francisco, his voice carries pretty far. Here's what he had to say about making laws to protect the public health.
Well, there are interests who are opposed to changes and regulations, and would like the telecommunications industry would like you to think that your cell phones are never going to have any detrimental effect to your health. And even if there is evidence of that, they'll probably try to suppress it. And so when you try and have legislation that might impinge on what they feel are their rights, they're going to start calling it names. And so that's the frame they want us all to be in, is that if you were going to require regulations that could help protect people's public health, they're going to say that you are overbearing and you're acting like Phoebe Figalily from Nanny the Professor.
So you think that legislating for the public good in the public health, for example, is valid and important?
When we see, I have on Ocean Avenue, we have a McDonald's. It sells every moment of the day. You'll see about 20 cars passing through there. It is on Ocean Avenue. It takes up a whole city block. Part of that is just a parking lot, and people are getting fast food there from McDonald's.
Right across from City College.
Right across from City College. Is that a good use of land in San Francisco? I don't think that's a really good use of land. We have a housing issue. We have, how many jobs there are at McDonald's? 20 to 30 jobs.
Pretty low paying.
Pretty low paying jobs. Is that a huge public benefit? I would say no. Is that a huge resource that's being underutilized? Yes. There are ways that business is set up that is not really beneficial to the general public. And I think looking at how we can create structures to help businesses improve what their record is and the benefits they provide is what government should be looking at.
That's San Francisco Supervisor John Avalos.
We heard him mention McDonald's, which brings to mind another bout of controversial public health legislation in the city.
Yeah, remember when Supervisor Eric Marr tried to take the Happy out of the Happy Meal?
Yeah, here's the backstory. Supervisor Marr has long been a crusader for healthier living, and a couple of years ago, he took his concerns to City Hall. He proposed a measure to make San Francisco the first big city in the country to ban restaurants from giving away a free toy with meals that contain too much fat and too many calories.
And it passed. And people around the country were like, what? They'd actually told McDonald's that its iconic Happy Meal was not welcome anymore in their city. People were dumbfounded.
Including people at The Daily Show. Here's Supervisor Marr being interviewed by reporter Asif Mandvi.
McDonald's or Burger King use toys to lure kids, but the toys are attached to meals that are largely too sugary, fatty, and high salt content that it is very bad for them.
Yeah, we know that. So what you're basically telling us is, guess what? McDonald's food is
Yes.
Duh!
If there is no toy, the kids wouldn't eat the meal.
No, of course they wouldn't. As our hidden camera, shot from the perspective of a 6-year-old, shows, there's nothing appealing in McDonald's except the milkshake and the fries and the sundaes and the McNuggets.
Did you get it? So you've literally created a nanny state. To get your toy, you're going to have to eat your fruit and vegetables.
No, we're saying that we want healthier options in fast food companies in San Francisco's if they want to attach a toy to it.
Right, but you... That's what I just said. You just said the same thing I just said.
Of course, in San Francisco, you're always going to get your counterculture radicals complaining about corporate hegemony, like Mayor Gavin Newsom.
It's a bad idea. We're getting into private business decisions. It is not the role for government to decide what's in the best interest of kids. It's the role of parents to decide.
Mayor Newsom ultimately didn't have all that much to say on the matter.
But McDonald's sure did. And they figured out a way to get around that ban. They started charging 10 cents a toy for each Happy Meal, which is a pretty small price for consumers to pay. But then McDonald's donated all that money to the Ronald McDonald House.
Ah, so the corporation saved face.
Yeah, and at the same time, they put egg on Supervisor Mars.
Well, it's hard to know where to draw the line when it comes to legislating public health, when you're going to ostracize the public, when you're going to get sued.
Or when you're going to get ridiculed.
But that's part of the job. So we asked another prominent elected official from the Bay Area for his thoughts on the topic, State Senator Leland Yee, who represents San Francisco. Here's what he had to say about it.
Well, you know, we would all like to believe and want to have a society where nobody tells us what to do, or that nobody restricts our behavior and what have you. But I think that, you know, I'm one of those old-fashioned kind of progressive liberal that government is there to try to be of help to people. And so when you do have, you know, young individuals who are in their formative years, you ought to be able to have certain laws that can kind of help them grow in a productive way. And so with the Happy Meal, for example, you know, I know Eric Marr, who was a supervisor, who was the author, got a lot of negative press. But I think that the thing that we've got to remember is that we do have an obesity problem. And we would like our parents to be able to control what our kids eat. And for those parents who can do that, you will not need the Eric Marr law, because the parents can, in fact, dictate to the kids what is it that they ought to be eating and come to some understanding. There are going to be some other parents who can't do that. And so we in society have to ask the question, what do we do about those kids? Do we allow them to have a unhealthy lifestyle so that they can further or, you know, hurt themselves? Or do we provide them with some kind of assistance? And I think that that's where the Eric Marr bill comes in, that it really provides an assistance to parents to say to them that these your kids ought not to be eating these things because of the unnutritious attitude and values within that particular food. And as a result, if we can prevent that from happening, that's a good thing. The irony of irony is that the industry, the food industry, were clamoring against this particular bill, but then yet they also now have seen the errors of their way, and they have modified their selection for children. And so, because I think all of us understand that we've got an obesity problem, and we've got to handle it. And anything and everything that we can do to try to help kids be a lot more healthy, I think it's a good thing.
That's State Senator Leland Yee, who represents San Francisco. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about legislating public health by returning to the city of Richmond for a conversation with Mayor Gail McLaughlin.
What we want markets to do is to, you know, start putting on the front counters the other beverages, you know, showcasing more the sparkling water and the juices and you know, healthy drinks. They can change their marketing approach in terms of how they showcase products in their stores. And in that way, they'll be encouraging a healthier community, and they'll be, you know, bringing forward the same amount of revenue that they always have for themselves, and you know, they'll still have sale of the sugary beverages, but just at a lesser amount.
Before we hear more from Mayor McLaughlin, we're going to take a short break to give you a chance to call and become a member of KALW. 800-525-9917. Or go online if you'd like to continue to listen to us and not step away to a phone. You really want to hear Cross Currents. We don't blame you. So just go to our website, open up KALW.org, and click the Donate Now button.
And something you're not going to see in there, but you need to know, is that we have a $500 challenge
going on right now,
Hannah. One of our listeners has given $500 that has a little stipulation on it. They're asking other listeners to support us right now at 800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org. All of your dollars, once we hit that $500 level, are going to be matched by a $500 gift from an anonymous listener. We really appreciate your help, but we need it right now.
And you've been challenged.
Yeah, you've been challenged. That's right. Take it. The gauntlet's been thrown. 800-525-9917.
Or KALW.org, and you can look at all the gifts on there. But really, I think the greatest gift is that you're becoming a part of a community that is just so special. 800-525-9917. Give us a call right now. We have some time left. left where you can call in and make your pledge. It goes towards the challenge, $500 challenge.
$500.
We still have a ways to go. And don't forget, when you pledge at any level, to claim your two tickets to our Cross Currents party. You have
December
to say
8th.
You want it.
It's December 8th.
December 8th.
At the Oakland Museum of California. It's going to be the live Cross Currents with the Cross Currents mixer before it.
That's absolutely right. So, but that only happens if you call us, 800-525-9917.
That's 800-525-9917, online at kalw.org. Think about giving $91.70. That's the number I'm looking for, $91.70. It's a quarter a day. Do the math, it's like a quarter and like, you know, 0.001 cent.
Right.
But that's it, 800-525-9917. And Hannah, all pledge drive long. We're keeping them short. This one too. Let's go back to the show. Now we're joined in studio by reporter Isaac Silk, who's been covering the proposition to tax sugar-sweetened beverages in the city of Richmond. Isaac, why do you think of all places in the country, Richmond should be the leader in this kind of anti-obesity measure?
Well, I think that Richmond is a great candidate for being a leader on anti-obesity measures because it has a serious obesity problem. Richmond has the highest rate of diabetes deaths in Contra Costa County, so it's ripe for reform. But also, it's an extremely poor city. 16% of people in Richmond are living below the poverty line. So there's not that much access to healthy foods compared with other Bay Area towns. But compared to the rest of the country, the Bay Area has an abundance of locally grown and healthy produce. So I think that Richmond, you know, has a big opportunity here to lead the way. They're also helped by the fact that they have three council members who are progressives and a very progressive mayor.
Yeah, Mayor Gail McLaughlin.
Yeah, she supports both the measure to tax sodas and the measure to direct revenue to healthy programs.
Mayor McLaughlin's pretty significant in the grand scope of things in the nation, really. Richmond's a city of more than 100,000 people, according to the latest census. So arguably, she's the most powerful green politician in the country. And she was behind a voter-approved tax a few years back that was pretty much exclusively directed at Chevron, which operates a massive refinery in Richmond, has for more than a century. And that recent tax was going to draw in more than $100 million over the next 15 years.
Yeah, it shows she's not afraid of taking on the big boys, whether it's big oil or big sugar.
Now, I'm interested to hear what Gail McLaughlin has to say about this soda tax. And you sat down with her to hear her thoughts about the idea of raising the tax on soft drinks by a penny an ounce.
Right, and I asked her about the concerns that some market owners have about the effect that tax could have on their businesses.
We want our community to not drink as much sugary beverages, and that doesn't mean they have to give them up altogether. The stores will still sell them, and if people just cut down 20% on the amount of sugary beverages they drink, there would be just a huge impact in the health and the reduction of obesity and diabetes and heart disease. And what we want markets to do is to, you know, start putting on the front counters the other beverages, you know, showcasing more the sparkling water and the juices and you know, healthy drinks for, I mean, they can change their marketing approach in terms of how they showcase products in their stores. And in that way, they'll be encouraging a healthier community and they'll be, you know, bringing forward the same amount of revenue that they always have for themselves, and you know, they'll still have sale of the sugary beverages, but just at a lesser amount.
I think one of the other things that makes people drink a lot of soda is that it's so cheap, and I think one of the concerns of people that I've spoken to in Richmond is just that healthier foods are more expensive.
The healthy food is something that we really know it, we're promoting in our community also at the same time. We're actually distributing healthy produce that's locally grown. So at very reasonable, at either no cost or very reasonable prices, like a box of Richmond-grown produce will be distributed, a full crate of healthy vegetables for $15. So, I mean, we are, and even less if people can't afford that, $5, you know. So we have gardens in both our high schools. We have gardens up and down the Greenway. We have a nonprofit called Urban Tilth that whose goal is to grow 5% of all our food locally. So we're really trying to make the affordable, healthy food put out there for our residents.
what do you see as the role of government in terms of public health? Like, how much of this is just trying to make people in Richmond more healthy as opposed to, like, saving money on healthcare costs or, yeah.
Well, my primary motivation here is the health of our community. There is no question that this is an epidemic in our community. I mean, the obesity rate of children in West County and Richmond is really, really high. And, you know, they've done studies where over 50% of children in certain grade levels are obese in Richmond and West County. And it's really troubling because these are kids who, you know, who deserve a healthy childhood and healthy teenage years and moving into becoming healthy adults. And yet they've been totally manipulated, as have, you know, adults, their parents and other adults, and all of us in many ways have been highly manipulated by the big soda companies. Big corporations have manipulated people for a long time and continue to, and so this is something that is directly impacting the health and well-being of our community, and it's a small way that we can make a difference and divert the funds into healthy activities and programs. I mean, it has created a situation where government it's important that government step in and say, hey, you know, we don't want our communities to suffer in this way. So that's what's motivating me, you know. I don't think it's in any way a hardship. Soda is not food. It's not an essential product that people need, and people can still purchase it on a more limited basis. So I'm doing this because, you know, I think it will cause people to reduce their consumption, and that's what's needed.
That's Richmond Mayor Gail McLaughlin speaking with KALW's Isaac Silk. Richmond voters will consider the proposition to add a penny an ounce tax to sugar-sweetened drinks in November. We've heard the mayor's opinion. Now, we'd like to hear yours. You can share it at our Facebook page. We're KALW News.
Coming up, as public health legislation against obesity takes shape, we see what we can learn from a historic lesson.
Well, the whole story in California started in the late 70s when a few people started thinking that they didn't want to breathe secondhand smoke.
The battle against big tobacco. That's after a short break, where we'll ask you what you want and what you're willing to do to get it.
And do you want good local public radio that contextualizes all these issues, that brings it to you, that's made by people who live right here in the Bay Area, just like you? Call 800-525-9917 or go online to kalw.org. We're asking you, would you think about giving $91.70, about a quarter a day? If you think about it, a year is 365 days, 366 days now and then. If that's about a quarter a day at $91.70, please go online at kalw.org and donate now.
800-525-9917. Give us a call. Say you want two tickets to the Cross Currents Mixer
that's
on December 8th. That's
8th.
Our gift to you. Give us a call right now, but you have to say you want the tickets, and then stick around during that night to witness our second annual live Cross Currents. We will all be there. We would love for you to be there and for you to come and just interact with us. 800-525-9917 is the way to make it happen. Call, make a pledge at any level, and join us on that day.
That's right. And we want to hear your stories. We want to hear stories about your neighborhood. That's
Absolutely.
What we're all about here at KALW. We are local public radio. We bring you the global issues here at KALW. We relate the stories that are coming out of New York, like Mayor Bloomberg's ban on big sodas today. We show you exactly how that's relating to the voters in the city of Richmond and what's going on with the emerging soda wars here. Please call 800-525-9917 to make that happen. Say you want to come to the Cross Currents Mixer and the live Cross Currents, where you can meet us in person. You could tell us the stories that are going on in your neighborhoods that you think should be covered. We will respond. 800-525-9917.
Or KALW.org and just click on the Donate Now button. And you know, like Ben said, we bring you the news that is important to you and election issues. But we also can have a little fun on Cross Currents. I mean, where can you hear John Avalos and then right after him, John Stewart from The Daily Show?
That's right. Or Stephen Colbert from The Colbert Report, followed by Leland Yee, state senator from San Francisco. And they all relate to each other. They all come together.
And we all do. We do it all here on Cross Currents. We bring you the news, but we also give it a little flavor, a little fun.
That's right.
Some comedy here and some, you know, we love to bring you a full experience, well-rounded. We appreciate you listening to us. So we put our all into these shows.
That's right, because this is important information. I mean, this is something that voters in Richmond are going to be thinking about, and then they're going to be giving a message to the nation about what does it mean when you tax yourself into healthier behavior? How does that affect your world? This is the kind of show that we want to bring to you here in the Bay Area. This is the kind of show that we want to hear here in the Bay Area. And if you appreciate this, please think about giving a quarter a day, $91.70 to KALW.org. Now is the time. And you know what? We've been doing short pledge breaks. Hannah, we're going to go right back to the show.
Let's go.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, joined in studio by reporter Isaac Silk. The debate over taxing sugary products to fight obesity is the latest in governmental efforts to legislate our behavior. Just to name the obvious ones, we've got laws prohibiting use of Schedule I drugs,
including heroin, cocaine, and marijuana, though the last one is in contentious debate these days.
And to a great extent in the Bay Area. The nation went through an era of prohibition in the 1920s when alcohol was illegal.
And that was a constitutional amendment. And it took another constitutional amendment to repeal that.
In 1933. But the one that's really taken shape over our lifetimes has been about tobacco. Let's see how that discussion has developed over the years through the advertisements Americans have consumed.
Doctors in all branches of medicine, doctors in all parts of the country were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" Once again, the brand named most was Camel. Yes, according to this repeated nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
This commercial aired in the early days of television, back in 1949.
Why not change to Camels for the next 30 days and see what a difference it makes in your smoking enjoyment? See how Camels agree with your throat. See how mild and good tasting a cigarette can be.
Then there's this one.
They sure work hard, don't they, Bonnie?
Yeah, I hate to see them work so hard.
Yeah, me too.
Yep, that's the Flintstones, the cartoon. In this episode, Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble are watching their wives doing chores around the house.
Let's go around back where we can't see them. Gee, we ought to do something, Fred.
Okay,
how's about taking a nap?
Hey, I got a better idea. Let's take a Winston break.
That's it!
Winston packs rich tobaccos specially selected and specially processed for good flavor in filter smoking.
Yeah, Bonnie, Winston tastes good like a cigarette should.
In 1964, Americans got their first whiff of the potential dangers of smoking when a Surgeon General's report showed a link between cigarettes and cancer.
The next year, Congress started requiring warning labels on cigarette packaging, but that didn't stop the iconic Marlboro Man. Remember him? More iconic back when TV viewers saw this ad in 1969.
When it's roundup time in Marlboro country, the day starts before the sun.
This was one of the last cigarette commercials to be seen on television. In the very next year, 1970, Congress banned them. Anti-cigarette advertisements began to take their place.
Like this one from the American Heart Association. It's a low-budget foil to the Marlboro Man. His name is Johnny Smoke.
Out of the land of the tobacco plant come a tall, hard-riding, long, lean bloke.
As the years went by, the federal government pushed harder against the cigarette industry. In 1992, it began denying federal funding to states that did not ban tobacco sales to minors.
Warning labels got more graphic, and so did the anti-smoking advertisements. By 2012, this year, they've become grotesque. Consider yourself warned.
Johnny Smoke.
After losing my big left toe and the plastic tubing was stuck in my left leg, you know, obviously I was able to stop smoking. But sometime in over the next few months, I ended up smoking 4 or 5 cigarettes. The plastic tubing plugged up in my left kneecap, resulting in lost circulation to my left foot. In a matter of 3.5 weeks, my left foot went from a normal-looking foot to a foot that had to be amputated. A third of my foot was missing its skin, so you could see the red fleshy meat. Where my big toe used to be, I had a huge ulcer so big as the one I cleaned it out. Besides gagging on myself from the smell, I could see the bones inside of my foot. Both of my index fingers are shorter. The tips turned black, the black tissue fell off. I had bones sticking out of one of my index fingers, and then the other finger, the tip turned black, and then the doctor actually pulled that off. The addiction is so overwhelming that after losing my body parts, I'm still outside smoking.
Okay, back now with Isaac Silk, who's been reporting on how the government has worked to affect lifestyles through legislation. We're covering a lot of ground here, Isaac, considering these different so-called sin taxes. So what does the latest debate over how to handle obesity fit in with the lasting discussion over how to handle lung cancer and smoking?
Well, the two are related conceptually as health issues, but they're not as similar as you might think, and research bears this out. Men who smoke a pack of cigarettes a day have a relative risk of mortality nearly 4 times higher than the national average. The relative risk of mortality from obesity isn't even close to that. It's 1.5 times higher than average.
4 to 1.5 is not very similar.
Not really. But for healthcare advocates, there are a lot of lessons to be learned from how activists and the government work to stamp out smoking. To learn more about that, I spoke with Dr. Stan Glantz. He's the director of the UCSF Center for Tobacco Control Research and Education. And to start with a comparison, here's what he has to say about the Richmond soda tax.
I think the measure to tax sugary drinks, which is starting out here in California, Richmond's a great idea. It's really modeled on the success that we had with the early clean indoor air movement at the local level. Whether it wins or loses in Richmond, the fight is joined. And the more discussion there is of these issues, the more debate of these things there are, the more the public gets educated. And it was a series of losses that we suffered in the late 70s, early 80s, that really laid the foundation for all the progress on tobacco since then. And I think that the same is true in the soda tax issue. I mean, sugary drinks are a huge public health problem. And taxation is a proven way to reduce consumption. And the debate over the tax is a great way to educate people. So, you know, whether the people in Richmond will succeed or whether the corporate interests that control the soda industry defeat them in this campaign, who knows?
That's Stan Glantz, who directs UCSF Center on Tobacco Control Research and Education. So when he talks about corporate interests, Isaac, they do wield a lot of power.
Because they have a lot of money. We just have to look back a few months to the fate of Prop 29.
It would have added $1 a pack tax to cigarette sales.
Right. And early on, it led in the polls by a lot. But when Big Tobacco threw its wallet against the measure, support started to erode. They spent nearly $50 million on a No on 29 campaign. And then the measure failed.
By a sliver.
Just enough. But advocates like Stan Glantz think you just have to keep coming with the legislation. It's interesting to hear about how the anti-smoking movement developed in California. It got its start right here in Berkeley. Here's what he told me about the history of California's anti-smoking campaigns.
Well, the whole story in California started in the late 70s when a few people started thinking that they didn't want to breathe secondhand smoke, that secondhand smoke was indoor air pollution, and that people should have a right to go about their lives without breathing it. And that group tried to get a law passed in Berkeley, which they did, which created non-smoking sections in restaurants. That was viewed as pretty radical for the day to say that you can only smoke in certain places. They then went to the state legislature to try to get a law passed for the state to, again, simply create no smoking sections, something that by today's standards would be considered a complete sellout to the tobacco companies. But by then, the tobacco industry had really realized they had a problem in California and was up in the legislature in force with their lobbyists, with their campaign contributions, and the effort was blocked. That led that group to try the initiative route, and they introduced an initiative in California in 1978 called Proposition 5, again, to simply create non-smoking sections. the tobacco companies came in, spent millions of dollars, more money than in every other state election in the state that year, and defeated this initiative, claiming it was unreasonable, that it infringed on freedom, that it was a nanny state, that the while secondhand smoke was a problem, the initiative itself was flawed. And in the end, it started out ahead, way ahead, and then the industry beat it back and defeated it. I got involved late in that campaign, personally. We tried again in 1980. The same thing happened. And then we realized that we just didn't have enough money to take on the tobacco companies in a state initiative campaign, that the tobacco companies owned the legislature. And so we went to working at the community level and started getting local ordinances passed around the state. By 10 years later, we had about 85% of the state covered by strong local legislation. In the mid-1980s, the Surgeon General issued the first report on secondhand smoke, saying secondhand smoke caused lung cancer, and that simply having separate sections wasn't good enough. And then the movement went toward having smoke-free environments, which we enjoy today.
That's Dr. Stan Glantz, head of the UCSF Center for Tobacco Control Research and Education. And we're here with KALW's Isaac Silk. So he's saying that back then, this so-called nanny state legislation only consisted of creating non-smoking sections in restaurants?
At the beginning, yeah. Then the activists led the way to where we are now through a series of propositions. Some were approved, some failed. But over time, the number of smokers in the U.S. dropped quite a bit. In the 1950s, nearly half of all adults in the U.S. smoked. Today, it's down to about 20%, and in California, it's less than 12, and it should continue to drop as the places available to smoke publicly disappear. In New York City, for example, which has overtaken California at the vanguard of public health legislation, it is now illegal to smoke in Central Park. And Mayor Bloomberg is opening up a new healthcare front, the fight against large sodas. Some herald these projects as the next great step in creating a healthier population.
But not everybody.
No, think Ron Paul.
Sure. There are plenty of people who want less government involvement, not more.
Right. So after hearing from all these politicians and people with a stake in the argument, I thought it would be only fair to hear from someone who disagrees completely.
Who did you get?
Marcy Berry. She's the vice chair of the Libertarian Party of San Francisco.
Libertarians, they don't have a whole lot of pull in local politics.
No, not here. But they do have an interesting perspective. I asked Barry if she thought the government should be involved with legislating healthy lifestyles.
No, at all times, no. Should be left out to parents, to families, to people in charge. It's not, in my opinion, up to the government to address such things. So, say, if someone is obese, why is that person obese? She shouldn't eat that much. I have children. They're not obese. So I don't expect the government to make them thin. I expect myself to guide them.
What about in low-income neighborhoods or so-called food deserts where healthy food isn't as readily available or for financial reasons people can't afford to get healthy food? How can people deal with that without the help from the government?
Were you speaking to someone upper middle class? I would say, yeah, that's a good question. However, I'm not rich, and I came as an immigrant with absolutely nothing. You look at me, I'm not obese. So I think there is an excuse that parents and people use. Oh, there is no food. Oh, there is no... No, we lived in pretty, pretty run-down neighborhoods when I was little. Very run-down. You know, we were immigrants. We never had that problem.
So obesity rates are rising in this country.
Correct.
Do you think this is a failure of personal responsibility?
People absolutely.
So I think that we can both agree that it's still a problem that obesity is as high as it is. I'm just wondering how we can go about, you know, getting people to be more responsible.
You don't get to people to be responsible. One thing that perhaps could be addressed is good education. And, of course, you know, you could get me started in public schools and we would have another 3 days of good talk. But it seems like perhaps we could educate people. We could, for instance, say, don't sit in front of the television. You know, look good. You know, go out and run around your block. It's free.
But who's that we?
The parents. Then how about, again, the parents getting involved, the school, the teachers, just, you know, talking to the kids and saying this is not healthy, this is what happened. Show them about the same thing that appears in advertising about the lungs all being all black. Show the kids.
Let's talk a little bit about tobacco now.
Okay.
So do you think that the tobacco industry bears any financial responsibility for the damage to society that smoking causes?
No, you know, because in the sense that, you know, you have a business, you want to sell your products. It's up to you to buy it or not. But because we have, and everything is tied together, there's no isolated issues in the world. So we say, okay, we need to have health care. The minute we have health care, you and me pay the taxes to pay for the health care. Then, oh my gosh, people are dropping dead from cancer. Who's going to pay? The government. So we need to increase the taxes. So everything is tied together. And who would we tax? The cigarette companies, of course, because it's like a user fee. By the way, we libertarians do believe in user fees. So if we say, okay, this is a user fee that if you smoke, and, well, there is general government-supplied health care. What can you say? We wish there wasn't, but there isn't. There is. And so the user fee is the best we can do.
That's Marcy Berry, vice chair of the Libertarian Party of San Francisco. She spoke with KALW's Isaac Silk, who's here with us now. So, Isaac, she's clearly not a fan of government involvement in pretty much anything.
She's a libertarian.
Right, but she does recognize that when the government's involved with the healthcare industry, as it is, it has to have ways to pay for it, and the user fee is one of those.
Which brings us back to Richmond and the upcoming vote on the soft drink tax. As with issues surrounding smoking, there's a general interest in improving our health. But there's also a deep-seated lack of faith in the government's ability to effectively create and manage social programs. This mistrust is understandable. California, other states, and the federal government as well are currently running deficits. But then again, without government intervention, what lines of defense are left when some industries value profits over public health and when they have the money to influence us in what we consume? These are tough questions that we're going to have to face as a society.
Thanks for your reporting on that, Isaac.
No problem.
That's KALW's Isaac Silk, and you've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. You can find this show and extended versions of the interviews you just heard online at kalw.org. That's also where you can become a member of this local public radio station, kalw.org.
We're in our fall membership drive, and you know what, Ben? This is the last drive before the end of the year. Our next one is in May. Mm-hmm. This is the last chance to kind of get on the bandwagon of funding KALW. 77% of our budget comes from you. Why don't you join? Why don't you join, and you've been meaning to do it for a while? This is the time mm-hmm. to do it. You made a resolution back in January to be more helpful to the public good. This is your chance
I'm going to do
that.
Some good.
You're going to do good. You're going to be of public service. This is that. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
Please think about becoming a member at $91.70. Say, you know, I'm going to represent this 91.7 FM at $91.70. That breaks down to a quarter of a day. And it's so important that you do it right now because we have a $500 challenge.
That's
and
right.
We need to climb that hill and get up to the $500 challenge, because what that means is that your dollars will be doubled up to $500 if you become a member right now. But we only have like 2 minutes left to now before the end of Cross Currents today.
There's still time. There is still time to call 800-525-9917. I see some volunteers with phones that are not working. You need to make them work.
They want to work.
But you have to call them 800-525-9917 or go online at kalw.org and click donate now.
That's right. 800-525-9917. And Hannah, we've been talking about these different legislative decisions, the kind of propositions that are coming up in Richmond today. You know, one of our volunteers today told me that when you become a member of KALW, it's kind of like voting. It's kind of like going to that ballot and saying, you know what? This is how I choose
to spend my money. This is the kind of world that I choose to support. This is the kind of radio I choose to listen to. And you make that vote by calling 800-525-9917. Think about it that way. We're going to be making all kinds of decisions in November. This is a decision that you need to make today. Please make the decision to vote for KALW to support local public radio right now at 800-525-9917.
Or KALW.org, and you still have time to join in the challenge. Someone has challenged you to make a pledge, and they will match it up to $500, and we still have a ways to go, so give us a call right now, 800-525-9917, and ask for two tickets to the Cross Currents Mixer on December 8th.
Cross Currents Party.
Party, and you will join us. You'll meet all of us, me, Ben, Martina, Holly, the engineers, everybody, but only if you make that call, 800-525-9917.
Or online at kalw.org. That Cross Currents Mixer is your chance to come face-to-face with us and tell us what stories you want to hear from your neighborhoods, from your corners of the Bay Area. We're from here also. I live out in San Francisco. Hana, you're out there in Union City.
That's right.
And we want to have stories from all over the East Bay, the South Bay, the North Bay, San Francisco. That's who we are about. That's who we are. That's who you are. We're all in this together, Hana.
That's absolutely right.
All of us. Give us a call, 800-525-9917.
And we heard a lot today about Richmond, mm-hmm. and people are used to hearing about Richmond in certain news reports and the violence and the crime. No, we brought you an issue that concerns the people of Richmond, a health issue, a public health issue. And that's what we do. We dig deeper into what is really going on, what's really on your mind, wherever you live in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. So if you support our kind of reporting, this kind of reporting that brings you the in-depth issues, not just the flashy headlines and the if it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. That's not our motto. So if you support this kind of journalism, give us a call right now. You still have a couple of seconds left. You can do it, 800-525-9917.
Or online at kalw.org. Now's the time. Vote with your dollars. Say what kind of world you want, what kind of radio you want. Please support us at 800-525-9917. And hey, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for joining me during this hour, Ben.
It's my pleasure.